This is ContactTalkRadio.com, consciousness in action, and you are taking action into your consciousness by tuning into Contact Talk Radio.
And on TuneIn.com, Hing.fm, and UpSnap Mobile.
Contact Talk Radio.
Welcome to Medicine and Health with Dr. Paul Anderson. This is a show about opening up the often mysterious world of how doctors think. The goal? To empower the listener to gain access to the best health care possible.
Good day and welcome to Medicine and Health with Dr. Paul Anderson. In this show, we're going to examine the factors that affect us when we have chronic infections. So when you hear about a person having a chronic infectious condition, it seems very scary, and sometimes it certainly can be. And the famous chronic infections that we hear about sometimes are things like HIV. Some people who have the resistant staph, MRSA, and there's other very, very bad kinds of chronic infections that people can have. What we want to talk about today are the ones you don't hear about as often that can impact a person's health in a very, very profound way and sometimes can avoid detection. So where we want to start with this discussion is to look at the world of infections in the immune system and see how it could possibly go this wrong so that we don't have the classic signs and symptoms, or even maybe lab tests don't look too unusual. And so then we can just have a infection that kind of smolders in the background and decreases our immune activity and our energy, etc. So if we take a big picture look first at how the immune system keeps infections out of us, there's a number of ways, and I'm just going to talk about a couple of the really big ones. First off, we have skin, and the skin keeps out more infections than just about any other part of our immune system. It's called passive immunity. And then we have things like on our eyes, where the eye is exposed to the outside world. There's all kinds of enzymes and other immune products in the tears that keep infections from usually getting in through the eyes. Then if you think about it, there are two organ systems that are exposed to the outside world all of the time that don't really have skin on them and are a little bit different than the eyes, are going to be our respiratory system, including our sinuses and our throat and ears and lungs, and then also our digestive system. The digestive system and the respiratory system share an immune activity, and it's an immune protein, and it's called IgA, like alpha. IgA is an immune protein that is produced, and it's put out into your ear, nose, and throat area, into your lungs. It is put out in as well into your digestive system, and we call this the mucosal immunity. Anywhere you have mucous membranes, the IgA, like alpha, is going to be. IgA is there. A way to consider it is almost like flypaper would be to flies. So your respiratory system, whether it's your lungs or your ear, nose, and throat system, and your GI system, all the way from your mouth all the way through your GI tract, have little glands in them all the way through that produce this IgA. And the IgA is there to stop most of the bugs, the viruses and fungus and bacteria, from setting up housekeeping in those different areas. Because if you think about it, we're always breathing in air that has viruses or bacteria, etc. We're eating food and drinking water that always has some virus and bacteria in it, no matter how clean it is. And so the IgA system is there to help us block things out. Then there's other different mechanisms that the immune system has, such as cells that actually get activated to go kill things, cells that make specific immune antibodies against different bacteria and virus and fungus, etc. And so between all of these things together, we normally have a very good resistance to outside infections. So the only time that under normal circumstances we get a bad infection, like let's say influenza or a strep throat or something like that, is when the invading virus or fungus or bacteria is what we call a very virulent or strong virus or fungus or bacteria. So the bad infections that we know about and we hear about, like strep and staph and influenza and Haemophilus and HIV and all of those sort of infections that we're always hearing about, those are considered virulent because they have a way around the immune system. So what we want to talk about today are the ones that kind of fall in between the bad, bad infections and then the ones that we never know we even had. The ones you never know you had are the literally thousands of different bugs that you're exposed to every day that your immune system either traps through the IgA system or just completely inactivates through enzyme activity, or maybe a specific immune cell or a quasi-specific immune cell. There's some actually called natural killer cells that are roaming around your body. They run into the outside bacteria or virus, and they just basically kill it. And so we never even know we get exposed to most things. So you would think with an immune system that's this complicated and that with this many aspects to it, it'd be really hard to have an infection that we would get that would be kind of under the radar. It would make us not feel well, but it would also not be too detectable in most cases. And so what are these types of infections that can, in some patients, fly under the radar and cause symptoms that they may not associate with an infection? And I think it's best to start out with an outline of looking at what does the infection look like when it's noticeable versus not noticeable. So if you look at younger people, children through young adults, they might get infected with these different types of bacteria or viruses and have more of a classic response. One of the infections that we're going to talk about today is going to be a chronic respiratory infection called a Mycoplasma pneumoniae. Now, Mycoplasma is the smallest type of bacteria ever found, and it's unique in that it doesn't have a cell wall like all other bacteria do. And it's also, hence the name pneumoniae, it usually creates what we call a walking pneumonia or atypical pneumonia. So if you're a young person or it's maybe your first exposure to Mycoplasma pneumoniae, the term walking pneumonia came from the fact that it doesn't fill your lungs up with blood and pus like regular lobar pneumonia does, but you feel fatigued, you have a cough, the cough is productive, you can have fever and all of those things. A lot of people will have Mycoplasma pneumoniae or its cousin C. pneumoniae and never even, you know, think that they have a bacteria. They'll think they have a viral cold or maybe the flu, and they'll move forward. So then what happens is because the bacterial problem, the C or M pneumoniae, is never treated, it can go into a resistant state that just lives inside of the respiratory tissues and goes quiet. And then maybe 6 months and maybe 3 years later, it can actually come out of its resistant or cystic state and create symptoms. And when it creates symptoms, the next time it comes out, it may not have a lot of lung symptoms. And that's the best example that we can use of why you would have an infection that in the pathology book has particular classic signs and symptoms, but as an adult, you may not know that you even have it. So we'll start out with thinking about where do most of these chronic things enter, and when they are inside the system, what are going to be the classic things that we would want to look for that would even make us want to screen for them? So part of this is you go to your doctor and you say, you know, I've just not been feeling well. And we've had some other shows about, you know, chronic fatigue and thyroid problems and all of that. And so they maybe check out your blood count and you're not anemic, and they check out your thyroid and that seems fine, but you just feel run down and not feeling too well. Or maybe you're having, you know, joint pain and stiffness and, you know, just again, not feeling yourself. So they'll check and see if you have arthritis and other things, and you really don't have that. Well, the reason that that can even happen can sometimes be that you're carrying around an infectious agent that you've maybe had for a while or been re-exposed to, but here's the most important thing, you didn't have the normal immune reaction to it. So when you don't have the normal immune reaction to a bug, then it can hide, and your doctor doesn't really think to do anything about it because you're not having the normal symptoms that you're supposed to. So when we're thinking about looking at where would we start checking for these things and who would we check for them in, first we want to think about how do they get in. So that IgA system, the mucous membrane system we talked about, covers a lot of territory. There's more mucous membranes inside your body by square feet than there is skin on the outside of your body. So you have a lot of space that is exposed to things like food and foodborne pathogens, airborne pathogens, etc. So if you think about your ear, nose, and throat and your lungs, you've got a lot of territory there. We're constantly breathing things in. You got your GI tract where we're constantly eating and drinking things that carry stuff. So the first places that one would look for these things would be in the immune reaction to either respiratory or digestive system bugs. Other places where they can get in, sometimes through the skin. Now, usually with the skin, if you have a chronic infectious problem on your skin, it's going to look like something, either a rash or a boil or some kind of infected expression. And that usually gets you to your doctor, and they can do a culture on that. And they'll say, oh, well, it's, you know, some staph or strep or something like that, or maybe candida fungus. And there can be generally treatments for that. So skin is possible, but it's much less likely that you have below the threshold skin infection, because usually our skin tells us when there's something wrong. The other place that's common is, if these have been around for a long time, is the nervous system. And the best example of a chronic viral problem that goes to the nervous system and eventually creates symptoms but is quiet most of the time is what people call shingles. Shingles is the varicella zoster virus. And the varicella zoster virus is in the large family called the human herpes virus family, HHV. This family gives us many different types of viral infections that we'll talk about, but shingles is basically the chicken pox that you had as a child that has now come back out. Well, how in the world does it come back out? Well, the way that it comes back out is, after you have chicken pox, a small amount of the varicella zoster virus goes and it lives inside your nerve roots. So this is usually considered to be the nerve roots, right where they come out of the spinal cord. And the varicella zoster virus will live there in everybody for the rest of their life. Many people do not get what we call shingles or the zoster virus outbreak, but many people do also. And so what you'll see often is a person will start to have pain along a nerve area, often either in the back or sometimes the neck, around the ribs, etc. And they may think that they've hurt themselves. And so they'll go to their doctor and they'll say, you know, I'm having this back pain that doesn't want to go away, and it's getting worse and worse and worse. When you see that sort of thing, what your doctor's going to think is, if it's in an area of a nerve root, they're going to be looking for the shingles or for the zoster virus outbreak. And generally, eventually, the pain turns into a blistering sort of rash that becomes very painful and takes a while to go away. Now, There are a lot of commercials about this particular virus now because there are vaccines that people will use for zoster outbreaks or to prevent zoster outbreaks. If you're already having a zoster outbreak, then what you're going to need, the vaccine really won't help you at that point. What you need is treatment to knock back the virus and decrease the inflammation. It can be quite painful, and it can take quite a while for the pain and the outbreak to go away. So that's a real classic example of something that maybe you had chickenpox when you were 5 or 10 years of age, and you don't have a zoster outbreak until you're 50 or 60 years of age. So you can see that that virus can hang around really for your entire life. Now, I mentioned early in the show that the difference between the chronic insidious bugs that go on in people and the ones that we notice is usually the symptoms they give you. So that human herpes virus number 3 that causes the varicella zoster or the shingles is quiet for years or decades, but when it does cause a problem, it's a big problem. You've got a lot of pain, you have a skin issue that goes on with it, you have all sorts of things that get your attention and your doctor's attention. But think about for a minute if that same family had other viral types that could get inside of you and do the same thing and just stay quiet most of the time, again, until you get run down or tired, then that would be the perfect type of virus that would cause possibly global symptoms around your body that would become problematic. And largely, that family has a couple of viruses especially that create these problems. And they tend to be in people who are in the minority, who have been exposed to the virus, and the virus goes quiet, and then it does what we call reactivate. So the two that we see commonly in patients are going to be the Epstein-Barr virus, or EBV, and then the cytomegalovirus, which is its cousin, or CMV. Now, if you have an immune deficiency and you get CMV or EBV virus, you're going to have big, bad symptoms, and they're going to be potentially in the nervous system and all over your body in a bad way. If your immune system is just a little slow, however, you can have these viruses hanging out in your system, again, probably in your nervous system and your respiratory system, and they will stay quiet for long periods of time and wait for you to be run down or wait for you to get sick with something else. And then the virus takes that opportunity while your immune system is slowed down to flourish. And so what are the standard symptoms of Epstein-Barr or EBV and CMV if we're young and we have a healthy immune system? EBV and CMV cause what we call mono. So when you were a kid, if you ever had yourself or a friend or family member get mono, mono is mostly caused by the Epstein-Barr virus, but can be caused by CMV. And nobody is unaware that they have mono because they get really sick. What do you get? You get fever, you get extremely sore throat, you ache, you don't want to move, you have extreme fatigue, and it's like having the flu and strep throat at the same time. And so you get very sick and you have to lay low and stay, you know, out of school, et cetera. So nobody is unaware when they have mono. Often, you probably recall maybe as a kid, they call it the kissing disease or something like that. Why is that? It's because it's spread through respiratory secretions. And so you can get it by coughing, kissing, shaking hands, actually, any number of ways. So how in the world could EBV and CMV go from causing you to be that sick as a young person to completely unheard of as far as any specific symptoms when you're an adult? Well, it's kind of the same thing as the story of the mycoplasma pneumonia, the walking pneumonia virus. When you first get it, you get quite ill, bad sore throat often, very bad cough, et cetera, and people know you're sick. When you have a recurrence later, and the statistics say that almost all humans have had an immune reaction to Epstein-Barr, and many have to cytomegalovirus, but only between 5 and 10% of humans have a recurrence as adults or later in life. So who are the people that get these recurrences, and what does that look like? Well, the people who get the recurrences are really the same people who get the M and C pneumoniae recurrences as well. These are people whose systems have gotten run down, and so the immune system is having a hard time keeping up. And in that hard time keeping up, these chronic latent viruses and bacteria flare back up again. So then, why would that happen to that group of people and the other 90% of people who don't have chronic illnesses and fatigue, et cetera, don't get these problems? Well, the reason that 90%+ of people don't have recurrences of any of these things is because their immune system is functioning at a much higher level. And I've often had patients come in and say, you know, I don't ever get really sick. I never get the flu. I never get a sore throat. I just never feel very good. Well, one of the things about not getting sick or getting sick is it's not really that you're sick or not. It's what your body's reaction to the illness is. And so if you think about it, if I have a very robust, good, vigilant immune system, I'm going to stop bugs before they get in. I'm going to use the IgA in my respiratory and gut system. I'm going to, you know, have my natural killer cells killing stuff before I even get sick. The other thing, though, is if I do get something, I'm probably going to feel really bad, but only for a very short time. Because when your immune system gets really activated like it's supposed to, you feel pretty bad, but you get over it quickly, too. So that's a good immune. That's the bigger percentage of people. People who are chronically ill will often say, I'm never really sick, but I'm never really well. So think about that. What your immune system is doing when you're chronically ill is just keeping the status quo up. And we sometimes find these patients, and we will look, and they're basically what you would look like and think is collecting chronic infections. Well, they're not really collecting them as much as they just don't have the resistance to the chronic infections that they otherwise would. So then they start to have little insidious problems that suck the energy out of their system and degrade their immune system a little bit, and then the next infection sneaks in and flares up, and it degrades the immune system. So when we get to the patient, they often come in and they have these symptoms of they're achy, they're tired, they never really feel rested, they have joint pain that seems bizarre. They may even have nerve pain that seems bizarre. And there's no explanation for any of these chronic pain and fatiguing type of situations. Well, the way that we try and characterize it, we do the testing and we look at it and see that these infections are there, is two different things. One is your system has only so much energy. It's kind of like a bucket. And so if you have these chronic infections, it's like someone's poked little holes in the bucket, and the more little holes, the more energy leaks out. The other way to look at it is if your immune system, which has many, many, many parts, hundreds of parts actually, if your immune system is only fighting on one front as an army, let's say, it's going to have big symptoms and you're going to have big results. If your immune system is fighting on many, many, many different fronts at the same time, what you're going to notice is it can't be very efficient. If you think about an army trying to go and fight a foe, what would be better? To have all 1,000 army members fighting the one foe, or to have the 1,000 army members divided up fighting 100 foes? You're not going to be as efficient. And that's what the chronic infectious and chronically ill person will have. Now, it is important to remember that if you're getting a lot of chronic infections, your doctor is going to want to screen you for immune deficiency problems. And those come in a number of different areas. So if you have a lot of chronic infections, the first thing that your doctor will look at would be your blood count to see if you have enough white blood cells and enough of the families of white blood cells to help fight. Sometimes we see people with chronic viral infections and their total white cell count will be very low. And that obviously doesn't give you enough of the white blood cell soldiers to be fighting. The next thing that you want to check for, people can be born with genetic deficiencies in these immune proteins called the immune globulins. So earlier we talked about the IgA, like alpha. There's also IgG and IgM and IgE and others. So in rare occasions, a person will be born with a suboptimal amount of one of these groups. That can be diagnosed by blood testing. When it's diagnosed by blood testing, there's other tests that can be figured out and done to say, you know, you're just not going to have the IgA or IgG that everyone else has, and so you're going to be more likely to get infections. This is not as common, but it is something that should be looked into and worked up. There are things that can be done to work around that, but you always have this inborn deficiency of your immune globulin. Other things are looked at too, but then a lot of times we get patients that are coming in and they will say, you know, I've had all these things checked out. My doctor says I have normal white blood cells. My immune proteins are normal. I don't have a T cell disease. You know, we've checked everything out, but I just feel horrible. So we're going to go to a break in just a moment. And after the break, we want to talk about what do you do when the tests look normal, but you don't feel normal. So we'll head into a break right now.
Anderson Medical Specialty Associates is the clinic that Dr. Anderson founded to provide high-quality, integrative medical care to those with cancer and chronic illnesses. In over 20 years of work with this patient population and research into the best practices for treatment, this clinic provides the highest level of care. Their focuses include all types of cancer, autoimmune diseases such as multiple sclerosis and lupus, as well as chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, and chronic infections such as Lyme and Lyme-like illness. Their only goal is to help each person find the best path to health for their individual needs. Located in Seattle, Washington, visit the clinic website, www.amsa1.com, or call the clinic at 206-629-2186.
Okay, and we're back now. Today, our topic on medicine and health is chronic infections and the type of infections that fly under the radar and make us feel bad without giving us symptoms that often lead us to good diagnosis. So before the break, we talked about making sure if somebody has these chronic problems that they don't have something like an immune deficiency syndrome, that they're not on a medication that slows the immune system down, things of that nature. Most of the time in our office, when we get a chronically ill person in, they will have already had those things checked out. If they haven't, that's the first thing that we check, is make sure, you know, they weren't born with an immune deficiency problem, etc. But most of the time, all that's been checked out. And like we mentioned before the break, you have a situation where the person often says, I don't really ever get terribly sick, but I never feel completely well either. And in that situation, then you have these muddy symptoms like fatigue and sleep disturbance and pain that wanders around the body and muscle pain, and then it becomes joint pain, and then it becomes nerve pain, or maybe all at once sometimes, and it will ebb and flow. So some weeks you'll be worse than others. And people will be worked up and they won't have, you know, rheumatoid arthritis or lupus or any other bad autoimmune disease. Their doctors checked out things we've talked about on other shows, like their thyroid function and that, and maybe it's a little bit off, but that's not really helping as much either, getting that treated. When that patient comes in and we've worked up all of the really bad sorts of diseases that can take away immunity and all of that, what we do next is to do a panel of tests that look for the type of infections we talked about before the break that are insidious. So those are the kind that when we're young and relatively healthy, we get a real big immune response to in most cases. We get walking pneumonia, or we get mono, or we have a bad diarrheal illness, you know, GI tract problems, etc. And remember what we said is the model is kind of like when you're a kid, you get the chicken pox, and then 40 years later, you get shingles, and it's the same virus. It's just coming out a different way. That virus has the ability to hang out in your nervous system for the rest of your life. Well, these other infections are just like that. They will hang out literally in the respiratory system, the digestive system, or in the nervous system often, and they will come back out when you're at your weakest. And then in the case of people like we've talked about with chronic fatigue and those sorts of problems, often they have an overlay of multiple infections that stack up on one another. And so how does that happen, and how do we find out about it? Well, the first thing is you look at this history. We've checked out. You don't have an immune deficiency disease. You're not on drugs that are going to impair your immunity. Nothing else wrong that anyone can find out. We've also looked at the big picture things like your thyroid function and other things that could affect your energy. And then we move on and we do a broad panel of tests that looks at some of the more common infectious problems that can be in people without having specific symptoms. One that we talked about earlier are these chronic, we call them the chronic pneumonia, the C and the M pneumoniae organisms and their relatives. There are blood tests that can look for those and see if they're currently active in your system. We find that in a fair number of people. The other group is the HHV family of viruses. These are EBV and CMV family. And these are the ones, they're relatives of the shingles virus, but they're not the same thing. And EBV and CMV are the ones that, if you recall, as a young person, they would create signs and symptoms that would be like mono. And so EBV and CMV are often looked at. We can see how much reactivity you've had. And in the case of EBV, you can actually see if you are currently having a new infection with it. And you'll have people and they'll say, well, I don't have a sore throat and, you know, all that. All they have residual when they get a flare-up is they get more pain, they get more tired, and they may have brain fog and other things. So really, those aren't terribly specific symptoms. So we'll look at those, and maybe we may look at other members of that family. And then the one group that we haven't talked too much about would be things that live either in the respiratory or GI system that are supposed to be monitored by those IgA proteins, the IgA proteins, and they're supposed to be stopped by them. Well, we see different things that come out there. In a lot of our patients who have chronic pain and chronic fatigue, for instance, we'll see antibodies rising against the strep family of bacteria. And as you may have heard, there are lesser and greater groups of strep bacteria. We all think of strep throat as a child, and you know, if you don't treat strep throat appropriately, you can have kidney problems or heart problems, you know, rheumatic fever, that kind of thing. So we're always worried about that. Well, as adults, a lot of these patients who have these chronic problems will be starting to produce these antibodies against the strep bacteria with no sore throat at all. And what that does then is it leaves them with a body-wide antibody response that can cause joint pain and muscle pain and lots of things. And some of these live in the throat and mouth, but some of them actually live in the digestive system. So there's other things in the digestive system that can create trouble. We all have a little bit of a complement of not-so-good bacteria and fungus in the digestive system, but mostly we're supposed to have the good bacteria, like things like lactobacillus and bifidobacter and all of those good bacteria down there. So in our patients where we're having a lot of these problems, what we do is we often screen them for digestive tract bugs that shouldn't be there. You've heard of maybe the H. pylori bacteria that can cause ulcers and even cancer in some people. We'll screen for that. And we'll screen for these antibody-producing streptococcal bacteria. If it's very bad and if there's other symptoms, like, say, allergy symptoms, et cetera, we may actually do stool testing to see if there aren't other chronic infections that are not giving specific symptoms. For instance, there are some even parasite and fungal things that can create a lot of problems. So, like many things in medicine, the way your doctor is going to think about these things is, do they have classic signs and symptoms? If they do, then we look for the classic bugs that cause those signs and symptoms. The problem most people run into when they're trying to get these problems worked up with their doctor is, if you don't have classic signs and symptoms, there might not be any workup beyond that, because that's not part of the standard medical workup for an infection. Generally, when your physician is going to work up an infection, you need to have classic signs and symptoms. Well, what we've been talking about today is there's a smaller group of people, so that we're not talking about the majority of people, but a smaller group of people who tend to be chronically ill, who for one reason or another need to have these other infections worked up. Now, it might be because they have one of those immune deficiency problems that we talked about, or maybe they're on a medication that slows the immune system down. But most of the time, it's simply because their immune system has been overwhelmed so long that they can no longer keep all these bugs out. And that's why often the patient will come in saying they've seen two or three doctors and they still don't feel well. Well, in that case, one of the things that we want to work up and look at are these chronic infections, if they have that sort of history going on. And generally through regular blood tests or possibly stool tests, if it's a digestive tract bug, you can find evidence that these are either a problem or they're not a problem. Sometimes those aren't 100% accurate, like every test, but in many people with the right kinds of chronic signs and symptoms, which, as I said, could be things like chronic fatigue, chronic pain, chronic joint problems, chronic malabsorption and digestive problems, those are the tip-offs that would lead you to see that. Now, in preparation for this particular show, we've had some people write in and ask some questions that I think are very illustrative of some of these things. And this sort of is a good example of why you want to see somebody who works with chronic problems when you don't have the big name brand disease that they've already checked you for. The first one says, Dear Dr. Paul, I was diagnosed with Epstein-Barr virus by a blood test, and my doctor said that while I do have a recurrence of Epstein-Barr, probably from when I was a kid and had mono, that there is no treatment and they're not going to provide any treatment for it. I still feel horrible. Is there anything else that can be done? Well, this is a good example of the difference between treating an acute problem and a chronic problem. Now, I don't know if you recall when you had mono when you were young, you may not have been given much treatment there either, other than to stay hydrated, to take things for pain, etc. And that's kind of in, looks like from the way that the question is written, you know, what your doctor is thinking of here. This is a supportive care, we call it, meaning it's just basically symptomatic care. Now, what we find is usually when there's Epstein-Barr virus that has recurred, there are other ones that recur. So if this person, and we don't know from this email, but if this person also has a history of chronic fatigue or chronic pain, et cetera, we would do two things. One is we would start to treat the viral immune system to try and help it deal with the virus. The other, though, is we would screen them for the cousins of Epstein-Barr virus, like the CMV virus. We would look at those respiratory organisms, CNM, pneumonia, and the streps. Why? Because they tend to run together, and when you get run down with EBV, you can tend to flare with the others. And the bacterial ones, the pneumonia organisms, have antibiotics that can help them. Now, in chronic Epstein-Barr and CMV, there are antiviral medications that work to some degree, but they're not foolproof. Antiviral medications are only partially effective, and they require that your immune system do the rest of the work, whereas an antibiotic may be able to actually kill the bacteria in question. An antiviral just stops the virus from reproducing. So your immune system has a lot of work when you have a chronic virus. So in our clinic, what we do is we take a two-headed approach to treatment. We certainly do supportive care, and that would be things for pain and inflammation, et cetera. But also, we take two aspects of treatment together. One is we may give an actual antiviral medication to stop that virus from replicating. And the other is that there's a large number of natural things that can be used short-term to help the immune system work better. So in doing so, you're both slowing down the reproduction of the virus so you don't keep building more virus, and you're supporting the immune system, which has probably been run down. Remember before the break we were talking about it's sort of like having a bucket with a bunch of holes poked in it. You're going to leak out a lot of water. Well, water's your immune reserve. If you come in and you're sick and you've got 20% of your normal immune reserve, you can't really fight very well now, can you? Well, that is the big problem when it comes to these chronic viruses. So we find, and we treat hundreds and hundreds of people with these recurrent infections, that a combination approach using the antiviral type medication as well as antiviral and immune supportive herbal extracts and some nutrients and some other compounds are the best combo together. Is it fast and does it work quickly? No. But the goal is to combat the chronic infection and restore the immune system to health. Now, a common question we'll get is, well, how long will this take? That's a very broad question, because if this is a person who's fairly young, let's say, you know, they're 28 or 35 years of age, and they've not really been chronically ill very long, we might be able to knock down the infectious things and get the immune system built back up in, you know, a matter of months and get the person feeling, you know, basically like themselves. If you're somebody who's, you know, 45, 55 or older, and you've had recurrent bouts of chronic fatigue, and you've been diagnosed with all manner of other problems like fibromyalgia and other chronic issues, then it's going to be a longer time to get back to normal immune function. And that's largely, as we talked about in a previous show about chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia, in those circumstances, you have not only immune problems, but you probably have hormonal problems and inflammatory problems and circadian rhythm sleep problems. There's all sorts of things going wrong there. So if you've had those problems for 10 or 15 or 20 or 30 years, you gotta fix the whole system. And the infectious part is a huge piece of it. So we have another question here that was sent in. This is Dr. Paul. I have had Mycoplasma pneumonia, which my doctor told me was also called walking pneumonia. And let's see how this is written here. Oh, I see. So this person has had this mycoplasma pneumonia diagnosed in the past. And from the way that they've outlined it here in their email, what they're saying is that 10 years ago they were diagnosed with mycoplasma pneumonia that presented as a walking pneumonia, and they were treated. They have recently tested positive due to a large amount of fatigue and a sore throat for mycoplasma pneumonia again, and they're saying here that their doctor doesn't want to do any prescription or treatment for it the second time around. Basically, the question is, so why is this and what's going on? Well, this kind of goes back to the idea around chronic infections being treated and looked at very differently from acute infections. So what we mean by that basically is, in primary care, a lot of times they wouldn't even recheck for the mycoplasma pneumonia. In our clinic, for instance, or in any place that sees chronically infected people, we often would. The other thing is around treatment guidelines and how aggressive you want to be. And so what we see in primary care often, which is kind of what it sounds like is going on here, is they will say, well, it's a chronic infection. There's no point in treating it because you're not very sick. Well, here's the way that we would look at this particular problem. If this person has a clear history of walking pneumonia organisms like mycoplasma bacteria, and you come back and you have these diffuse symptoms, such as maybe a little cough, maybe no cough at all, fatigue, maybe a little fever at night, maybe not, et cetera, and we recheck you and your mycoplasma pneumonia titers are elevated, and there's ways on the test to see if it's active or not, we are going to opt, like with the Epstein-Barr virus, to treat you. There are generally very good antibiotic strategies that can be used for the CNM pneumonia family, and they have to be cycled. It's a little different than treating an acute infection with these problems. And what you have to keep in mind with these, which is, you know, just like in this patient's case, the doctor doesn't want to do this, but part of the reason is they're kind of tricky organisms at that point. So what you're doing in those patients is cycling treatment, a lot like with the viruses, only here we're using an antibiotic or a couple of antibiotics. So we cycle treatment, and we also are going to support the immune system so that it doesn't let these guys back in. And the important part about that is it's always got to be this sort of 1-2 punch that you're thinking of when you have these chronic issues. The number one part of the 1-2 punch is something directly to degrade the ability of that bacteria to reproduce. And that would be an antibiotic. And usually what we do is we cycle 1 or 2 antibiotics for these chronic lung or respiratory infections on and off. And when you're off of the antibiotic, you're going to be on an antimicrobial, or what we might call an antiseptic type of an herbal preparation. The reason for that is the antibiotic never achieves resistance because the bug doesn't see the antibiotic long enough to have that happen. And then the antimicrobial herb is there to keep the bacteria from resurging and replicating during the break time. And then we go back and we do a couple of more cycles with the antibiotic and the antimicrobial herb so that we have a better chance of killing it and knocking it down. So as we go through this, we also add some of those same immune supportive nutrients and other things so that the patient is supported through the process. Now, like I said earlier, this would be a clear case where in our office dealing with chronic illness, we would not only check for this, we would also treat it and generally treat it very aggressively, because if you don't, our experience has been that these infections just return. And the last thing you want is the infection to return, because like we've said a lot before the break, the one chronic infection sets up your immune system to be active in a way that allows the other chronic infection. And so imagine if you had this mycoplasma bug that you're fighting, and then you've got Epstein-Barr on top of it, and then you have all these other things that sort of cascade. And when we see our really, really sick patients, that's the type of problem that goes on. Often they haven't been tested for any, and they've had them active for months or maybe years. So it can be quite a time getting it undone. So today, what we've been talking about largely is the variety in the human immune system, and where 85 to 95% of most humans who are healthy don't have chronic infections. In the, you know, 5, 10, 15% of people who do, the way that they are assessed and tested and the way that they have to be treated is quite different from the other larger group of people who don't have chronic infections. And this really comes down to the fact that most of what you see in primary care are people who don't get chronic infections, so you're not going to be looking for the chronic problems or treating them. So if you're having trouble with these things, or you're having trouble with, you know, chronic fatigue and chronic pain, etc., you want to go to a physician who's trained in these sorts of chronic illness. As we've said in other shows, if you're in a state, one of the 17 states that licenses naturopathic physicians, they can kind of look at both sides. They're trained in standard medicine and diagnosis, and they're also trained in the treatment of chronically ill people. If you're not in a state where naturopathic physicians are licensed, you know, such as California, Oregon, Washington, Arizona, many other states through the country, and you're not in one of those states, then you want to look for a physician who is trained in integrative medicine, sometimes also called functional medicine, and they will be trained in the same methods that we've been talking about today to deal with these chronic problems as they come up. And the big picture to keep in mind is, although it's a minority of people statistically who get these chronic infections, it's the majority of people who have chronic undiagnosable illness who do. So you think about your people with chronic fatigue, people with chronic pain, people with fibromyalgia, all of those types of disorders. Those are the people who really need to have these chronic infectious problems checked out. So I'm Dr. Paul Anderson. This is Medicine and Health with Dr. Paul Anderson, and we have spent today talking about chronic infectious problems and how they can affect your health. If you feel that you or a family member are having these sorts of issues and you have not been tested for any of these, you can go and see a naturopathic physician or a physician who specializes in integrative or functional medicine, and they will be able to help you. I'm Dr. Paul Anderson from Anderson Medical Specialty Associates in Seattle, wishing you a good day.
Anderson Medical Specialty Associates is the clinic that Dr. Anderson founded to provide high-quality, integrative medical care to those with cancer and chronic illnesses. In over 20 years of work with this patient population and research into the best practices for treatment, this clinic provides the highest level of care. Their focuses include all types of cancer, autoimmune diseases such as multiple sclerosis and lupus, as well as chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, and chronic infections such as Lyme and Lyme-like illness. Their only goal is to help each person find the best path to health for their individual needs. Located in Seattle, Washington, visit the clinic website, www.amsa1.com, or call the clinic at 206-629-2186. You've been listening to Medicine and Health with your host, Dr. Paul Anderson. Visit the clinic website at www.amsa1.com, or call the clinic at 206-629-2186.